Sunasira,
Sunasira,
Sribi,
Sada
The head of a goat joined to the body, Daksha came back to consciousness again. This indicates that consciousness is also individual. Daksha also actually took another body when he took on the head of a goat. But because consciousness is individual, his consciousness remained the same, although his bodily condition changed. Thus, bodily construction has nothing to do with the development of consciousness. Consciousness is carried with the transformation of the soul. There are many instances of this in Vedic history, such as the case of Maharaj Bharata. After quitting his body as the king, Maharaj Bharata was transferred to the body of a deer, but he retained the same consciousness. He knew that, although formerly he was king Bharata, he had been transferred to the body of a deer because of his absorption into the king of a deer at the time of his death. Despite his having the body of a deer, however, his consciousness was as good as it was in the body of King Bharata. The duration by the Lord is so nice that if a person's consciousness is turned into Krishna consciousness, there's no doubt that in his next life he will be a great devotee of Krishna, even if he is offered a different type of body. At that time, when Dr. saw Lord Shiva, who rides upon a bull, his heart, which was polluted by envy of Lord Shiva, was immediately cleansed, just as the water in a lake is cleansed by autumn rains. Therefore, here's an example of why Lord Shiva is called auspicious. If anyone sees Lord Shiva with devotion and reverence, his heart is immediately cleansed. King Daksha was polluted by envy of Lord Shiva, and yet by seeing him with a little love and devotion, his heart immediately became cleansed. In the rainy season, the reservoirs of water become dirty and muddy, but as soon as the autumn rain comes, all the water immediately becomes clear and transparent. Similarly, although Daksha's heart was impure because it was having slandered Lord Shiva, for which he was severely punished, Daksha now came to consciousness, and just by seeing Lord Shiva with veneration and respect, became immediately purified. King Daksha wanted to offer prayers to Lord Shiva, but as he remembered the ill-fated death of his daughter Sati, his eyes filled with tears and bereavement, his voice choked up, and he could not say anything. At this time, King Daksha, afflicted by love and affection, was very much awakened to his real senses. With great endeavor, pacified his mind, checked his feelings, and with pure consciousness began to offer prayers to Lord Shiva. King Daksha said, "My dear Lord Shiva, I committed a great offense against you, but you were so kind that instead of withdrawing your mercy, you have done me a great favor by punishing me. You and Lord Vishnu never neglect even useless, unqualified brahmanas. Why then should you neglect me, whom engaged in performing sacrifices?" Purport: although Daksha felt defeated, he knew that his punishment was simply the great mercy of Lord Shiva. Remember that Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu are never neglectful of the Brahmins, even though the Brahmins are sometimes unqualified. According to Vedic civilization, the descendant of a Brahmin family should never be heavily punished. This was exemplified in Arjuna's treatment of Aswatthama. Aswatthama was the son of a great Brahmin, Dronacharya, and in spite of his having committed the great offense of killing all the sleeping sons of the Pandavas, for which he was condemned even by Lord Krishna, Arjuna excused him by not killing him because he happened to be the son of a Brahmana. The word Brahma Bandhu used here is significant. Brahma Bandhu means a person who is born of a Brahmin father, but his activities are not up to the standard of the Brahmanas. Such a person is not a Brahmana, but a Brahma Bandhu. Daksha proved himself to be a Brahman Bandhu. He was born of a great Brahman father, Lord Brahman, but his treatment of Lord Shiva was not exactly Brahminical. Therefore, he admitted that he was not a perfect Brahman. Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu, however, are affectionate even to an imperfect Brahman. Lord Shiva punished Daksha not as one does his enemy. Rather, he punished Daksha just to bring him to his senses, so that he would know that he had done wrong. Daksha could understand this, and he acknowledged the great mercy of Lord Krishna and Lord Shiva towards the fallen Brahmins, including even himself. Though he was fallen, his vow was to execute the sacrifice as is the duty of Brahmins, and thus began his prayers to Lord Shiva. Therefore, Bhargava, the chief of the great cities, invited Shiva to come to the sacrificial arena. Thus, the demigods, accompanied by the sages, Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, all went to the place for the sacrifices. So the situation was resolved because of the mercy of Shiva. He forgave Daksha and the others, so the sacrifice could go on. And it's explained here, Daksha was revived by taking the yokes that had attached him to his body. And then immediately he came to consciousness and began to, of course, respect Lord Shiva, regretted the death of Sati, and offered prayers to Lord Shiva. So he begins by offering respects to Shiva, and he admits that he has committed offense, even though Shiva is very kind. Somehow or other, he insulted Lord Shiva. So he admits his fault. So that is one of the important factors in removing offenses. Vaishnava Apurad is considered the worst offense. And the first step to take is to ask forgiveness of a person that one has offended. So Vishnu Chakrabarti has explained this in the very phenomenon. And there he says that if one thinks that one will just perform devotional service and not ask for forgiveness, that will not be proper. Someone has to go to that person and ask for forgiveness. And of course, in most cases, the person who has been offended will forgive the person because Vaishnavas are forgiving. So it's not a problem, but the action must be done by that person in order to show that he is actually repentant for his action. So he has to do that practically by going to that person and apologizing. In the case that the person does not forgive him, which probably is very rare, then he has all he can do is take shelter of chanting the holy name. If he gets forgiveness, of course, that does not exempt him from chanting or whatever, but at least the hostility of the other person is not there upon him, so it is easier for the person. And if he, the other person doesn't forgive him, he will have some difficulty. All he can do is take shelter of the holy name, and eventually the effects of aparad will gradually dissipate. But the important point here is that he has to go and he has to feel repentant, and he has to go to the person and ask for that person's forgiveness. And in this way, the problem is solved. So this is exactly what Daksha does here. We see that actually he is repentant, and he understands that he did make a mistake, and he grieves for Sati, his daughter, and he offers prayers to Lord Shiva. So this is his way of nipping his mistake. And he also admits that he's been punished. But he takes that punishment as mercy. So that is also the Vaishnav attitude. It's explained that the Vaishnav understands that all of his suffering is due to his karma. But he takes his karma also as the mercy of the Lord. So he accepts the whatever difficulties he undergoes as a punishment by the Lord, but he takes that as mercy. So here, Daksha is taking a similar attitude, and he understands he was punished by Shiva, but he takes that as an act of mercy on the part of Lord Shiva. In the case of the Vaishnavas, of course, the karma actually is not direct mercy of the Lord, because the devotee also understands that karma is not directly implemented by the Lord, but the original cause of the karma is his own actions and his own desires. So therefore it says, kṛtaṁ vipākaṁ, ātmā kṛtaṁ vipākaṁ. He recognizes that his own problems now are the result of his own sinful activities. But still, that result that he gets through karma, he takes as the Lord's mercy. So the Lord is not directly punishing that devotee, but the karma is acting on him, and therefore that is also the mercy of the Lord, in the sense that indirectly through the law of karma.
In other cases, of course, the Lord may punish the devotee directly.
So karma is there in the form of suffering for the devotee. In other places, the Lord may, under certain circumstances, arrange difficulties for a devotee, and the devotee accepts those also. So, in any case, the devotee accepts all the difficulties as mercy of the Supreme Lord. What that means is he in no way feels hostility towards the Lord for all the difficulties undergoes in the material world. The other way of reacting is that, and when we get the difficulties, then we will say, oh, the Lord doesn't care what kind of God is he. Or that not only the Lord doesn't care, but the Lord is cruel because he's doing this to me. The Lord is doing this to me and he's very cruel. I don't deserve this. So one will develop hatred of the Lord because of all the problems one gets in the material world. So this is the opposite reaction. So one who is like that, of course, has no devotion. A person who accepts very willingly and takes it as all the Lord's mercy, that person is a real devotee. So the suffering in the material world also acts as a stimulus for the devotee. It is said in the fifth canto that the devatas pray that they will take birth on earth planets. Not because it's very nice, but because it's not nice. And it has the effects of suffering and karma quite obvious. But this acts as a reminder to the devotee of the problems in the material world, and also a chance to accept the mercy of the Lord and surrender to the Lord. So there's some advantage in that type of suffering for the devotee. So in any case, the devotees accept all the problems in the material world and do not in any way feel hostility towards the Supreme Lord. So here, Daksha recognizes his offense. He does not blame anybody else. He does not blame Lord Shiva. But he understands that he had a problem with his own pride, and therefore he found fault with Lord Shiva, in spite of the fact that Lord Shiva is supposed to be one of the main beneficiaries of the sacrifice. So he forgot proper knowledge, and instead he insulted Lord Shiva. So that, he understands, is the result of his own pride. So he admits his mistake, and he also praises Lord Shiva and says that actually this punishment was very good for me. So of course the result is that through this experience he recognizes that he has faults, which he is admitting here. So yes, it was beneficial. By admitting the fault, he can correct himself. So what he states here is true, and has been very Shiva has been merciful to him. And it was beneficial for him to undergo this experience so that he could actually realize his fallen position and his pride. So he states here that Vishnu and Shiva do not neglect even the unqualified persons, the Brahmabandhus, who are supposed to be Brahmins, but who are not Brahmins in actual practice. So even those persons get the mercy of Shiva and Vishnu. And Prabhupada here gives the example of Astadama getting mercy in spite of the fact they didn't deserve anything. So the devotees and the Supreme Lord are merciful even to unqualified Brahmins because of their title. Even though they don't deserve anything, and they have the title of being a Brahmin, of being born in a Brahmin family, so at least that respect is there. So the Lord respects the Brahmins, even the fallen Brahmins or whatever. This, of course, is somewhat dharmic. The Lord acts according to dharma as the king acts according to dharma. So yes, the Lord respects Brahmins, and it's true, but more than that, the Lord has attachment to devotees. So if he respects Brahmins, he actually is attached to devotees and falls under the control of devotees. So that is actually a more significant quality of the Supreme Lord. So simply being honoring Brahmins is, that's part of Dharma. So the Lord protects Dharma and therefore he honors the Brahma. But the Lord is very attractive to the devotee and is controlled by the devotee. So the devotee is actually in a higher position than the Brahmana. So some places in the Bhagavatam we will see the respect given to the Brahmana, given by Krishna, and of course by the devotees like Arjuna, etc., who tried to save the Brahmana sons. So respect, great respect is given. But ultimately, the great respect of the Lord is with the devotees. These are the ones who get the most mercy from the Supreme Lord. Within the Varnashram system, of course, the Brahmins are favored because Satyagun is more favorable for spiritual life. So therefore, they are more likely to advance by his mercy. So therefore, the Lord is very affectionate towards the Brahmins. That is not to say that he doesn't like Sudras or Vaishyas or Kshatriyas. The Lord himself appears as Kshatriya, and he appears as Vaishya. So he's Krishna is a Vaishya. So the Lord is not in any way hostile towards any Varna at all. But in terms of superiority, the Brahmana is sattvic. So Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that sattva is preferable to the other gunas. So he likes to encourage that sattvic quality, so therefore he honors the Brahmana. And in the Varnashram system, the king honors the Brahmins. He has to, because they are his advisors, and it's only by sattva that the king can rule properly. So sattva is very important to maintain within society. Therefore, the king maintains the Brahmins, and Krishna respects the Brahmins in order that sattva is maintained within society in general. But higher than society is the devotee. He is beyond sattva, and he is beyond the devotee. So Krishna has most attraction to that person. And that person may be in any of the varnas. He may be a sudra, whatever. He may not be in the varnashram system at all. He may be outside as well. The outcast, whatever. Still, the Lord has more attraction to that person than anybody in the varnashram system who is not a devotee. So therefore, the respect that the Lord gives is proportionate to the amount of surrender they have. So that the real surrender is with the devotee. And that is beyond all varnas and ashrams, etc.
Why is this Brahma-Bandhuna also respect? Because separate basis there that you know they are not hereditary. Like we have hereditary lines.
Yeah.
But they're not supposed to.
Yeah, only out of convention to maintain society, that's all. Now we see they don't act properly, as in the case of Aswatthama. He doesn't deserve anything, but simply to maintain the idea that Brahmins should be respected, they do that. Technically, they can also get punished of some sort, you know, but they maintain the social rules and whatever in respect. But, of course, it is understood that one who is following properly is superior. So we see in the, for instance, in Lord Chaitanya's conversation with Ramananda Roy, there he gives the idea that people who are following Varnashram are superior to those who are not following Varnashram. The Brahmin is superior to the others. But well, the Brahmin actually follows and is not just following because he's got a name of a Brahmin, but actually follows and understands the instructions of the way that he's superior to the other Brahmana. And of course, superior to the other Brahmana is the Vaishnava. So, it is recognized that the Brahmabandhu is not actually proper, so therefore he's given his name Brahmabandhu. He's a friend of a Brahmana, he's not a real Brahmana. But he's given some respect.
Can you also say Vaishnava doesn't follow the Vaishnava Bandhu?
Like that. We know the name is not, it's Vaishnava Praya, I think the name is almost a Vaishnava. So they're also respected. Prabhupada explains that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that even these other people, you can mentally respect them, but that we understand that they're not quite proper, so therefore we do not associate with them closely.
You want to say for these seminar lines coming from
Yeah.
give some respect, but we don't associate with it.
Actually, Maharaj, even in case of this karma and mercy of the Lord, is it that Lord decides what part of the reaction to be given to correct the devotee?
But generally he does not interfere with the law of karma, but the effects become less and less as a person performs devotional service, that's all.
The tendency is that when somebody suffers, he puts a blame on other circumstances and others.
Hmm?
He puts a blame on others.
Yeah, well that's the problem. If you put blame on others, we'll never correct ourselves. So that means the law of karma doesn't work in that case. And then we'll suffer some more in the future, and then we keep suffering and suffering and suffering.
In one day, it's closed because everybody is affected by him. Nobody's independent. Somebody's action is the result of something.
Yeah, everybody's affected by everybody, but ultimately we have to take responsibility for our own actions. If we don't do so, then nothing ever happens in the world, and everybody can blame everybody, and everybody gets more and more degraded, that's all. So at a certain point, we do have to take responsibility for ourselves, in spite of the fact so many influences are there.
Regarding the head, the goat's head was chosen. But there were a lot of human beings also being dead, and the human head can be good. And even previously, when the Ganesh was asked to be a gatekeeper of authority, same thing Shiva and Ganesh called, and he made him fail. You think Shiva always said, person that human head called?
Well, I think he wanted to teach him a lesson. In other words, he got a goat head and Pusha didn't have any teeth, but he could eat through his disciples, etc. So he gave them some punishment even in this case. He didn't give them their complete body. Later, of course, in Chakshusha Manvantara, he did get another body, he did tapasya, and he got his actual head back again.
Maharaj, in case we offend a devotee and we beg for forgiveness, and sometimes even after begging for forgiveness and maybe he forgives also, but still there is some amount of feeling of disconnect between it's like not like the old relationship with the devotee in hand.
Yeah.
So, chanting?
Yeah, time.
And this chanting is beyond our 16 rounds?
No, not necessarily. Well, as much as you can.
I mean, forgiveness is asked, should be a genuine intention. Personally,
one has to feel repentance, actually, regret. That is
निरंतर श्री श्रीमद भागवतम की जय किशोर नस बाम महाराज की जय जीवन
गोपाल की जय अगोत्र मंदिर